Hi, everyone. I am Millie Landers, and this is How'd She Do That? A podcast answering that question each episode. Hi, everybody. Welcome to today's episode of the podcast. Every time I record that intro, I get so excited. I feel so grateful that I'm able to record this podcast and to share these conversations with you, which takes a lot of work, you guys. It takes a lot of work, and I'm so grateful for our amazing sponsors. Of course, this month, we had one of my favorite restaurant empires, Texas Day Brazil, where I first interned. It was my very first internship, and the team, Salim and others, have been so incredible to me since then. I'm so thrilled that I was able to share Texas Day Brazil with you all. And if you are near a Texas Day Brazil, be sure to tag us. Head on in, grab an amazing meal, take some photos, and enjoy. It's one of our favorite places for celebrations. And of course, my husband loves it. I love their beautiful salad bar. And if you were to look at my dad's camera roll, my mom's camera roll, we go there every Christmas pretty much. It is such a special place. So to be able to weave in all of these amazing people from many different facets of my life to the podcast, it's been amazing. So I'm super grateful, and I'm super grateful because this week I am celebrating a birthday. I'm so thrilled. April 25th is my birthday. I share that, as you guys know, with my twin sister, Whitney. Happy early birthday, Whitney. And I'm just so grateful. I'm so grateful. I mention this often that there a few years ago, 7 years ago, actually, one of my best friends lost her younger sister very suddenly, tragically, just a few days before my birthday. And I remember that year, I realized she would never turn the year that I was turning, and she would never be that age. And since then, I really take a moment to pause and to evaluate my life, to really recognize the privileges and the blessings and the gifts around me. And I want to share this too. I don't know what your last birthday felt like, but sometimes birthdays can have a push and a pull, right? Sometimes they're super happy. Sometimes they can be a little sad. My birthday this year is a little sad. There's a little sadness. I have a little underlying sadness in my life right now that I love to be, or I don't love to be, but I want to be honest about, and you guys have heard me say it this way, I would have thought I would have been a mom a long time ago, and I haven't had many representations of this voice that I now have in my life, and so that's why I feel so kind of called to share a little bit more and to peel back the curtain. So if that's you, and if, you know, there's a birthday that's come around that you've experienced this, you can think of me, and you can... if that's a birthday that you've experienced this year, I feel for you. And I think it's important to talk about. And I would have thought that my life would be very different. I have a wonderful life, but I did think there would be some key elements in place that aren't. And so we carry on. We carry on into a new year. And I just cannot thank you all for the community that you guys have built here, the support, the love, from sponsorships to upcoming guests to previous guests. I want you guys to make sure that you've listened to our previous guest here on the show. I wanted to mention season 4 has already had some incredible guests. We've had Becco Bags founder Caitlin Osborne on, of course, the CEO of J. McLaughlin, Mary Ellen Coyne, Sarah Meyer Thompson. We had Houston-based interior designer Katie Davis. Many of you guys were super thrilled about her. Rebecca Hessel-Cohen. And then a recent ad to shophsdt.com, my friend Laura Park, as well as Sophie last week. If you missed Sophie's episode, go back and listen. Go back to and listen to Holst and Lee founder Natalie Holst as well, and enjoy the beginning of season 4. We've already had such an amazing year, and I'm so excited about our sponsors upcoming and our upcoming guest. If you are interested in sponsorship, please do reach out to us over at howdshedothatpodcast.com. And if you would like to leave me a special birthday gift this week, please go ahead and do so by purchasing something on shophsdt.com or leaving us a 5-star review. Here is Soon Haggerty on How'd She Do That. Today's guest is Soon Haggerty. From fleeing Saigon with her family amid the Vietnam War to leading brand strategy at Haggerty Insurance, Soon is a philanthropic and business renowned woman. She's the founder of charitable Vietnamese restaurant, The Good Bowl, as well as co-founder and president of the Boundless Futures Foundation, which supports mission-driven women entrepreneurs. I'm thrilled to have Soon on HSDT today. Soon, welcome to How'd She Do That?
Thank you, Emily. I'm so excited to spend some time with you today.
Well, likewise, I have been so eager to record with you, and I kept your intro short because I want to hear from you. Like, I just put a few little tidbits in there. I'm like, we need to hear from soon because your story is incredible and what you're doing now is amazing. So I'm eager for listeners to go ahead and get to know you. So how about we do just that? Maybe you tell us a little bit about your upbringing and ultimately where you went to school.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think when you're young, you want to be like everybody else, right? You want to dress like everybody else. You want to act like everybody else. And I would have to say all through my, elementary, high school, I wanted to be like everybody else. Mm-hmm. But when you're an immigrant from Vietnam and you come to the United States when you're about 5 years old, you don't know how to speak English. Your entire family doesn't know how to speak English. And you're immediately immersed and an English-speaking school, all pretty much mainly Caucasian, mm-hmm. you stand out. Mm-hmm. And so it's really interesting when I turned, I would say, 30, in my early 30s, I recognized that my immigrant story really defined who I am. So my mm-hmm. background is just, as an entrepreneur, everything ties back to my family and my early experiences. And it's been a really cool, enlightening experience to recognize that.
That's amazing. And gosh, tell us a little bit more about that journey. I mean, your parents, they were like, okay, we've got to leave. Where did you ultimately land at first in the U.S.?
Yeah. So my dad fought for the American side, so the South Vietnamese. Wow. And my uncle also fought for the South Vietnamese. And when that happened, after the fall of Saigon in mid-70s, if you fought for the South, you were asked to join, quote unquote, the re-education camp. Oh. As you can imagine, there's no education happening there.
No.
And so my uncle, a few years earlier, fled to the United States, to Fresno, California, Central California. Oh. And, he was there for a couple of years before my parents were able to leave. And I found this out as an adult that he saved $500 a month for 4 years to bring to get us our papers. Mm. So we actually landed in Fresno, California, where I went to school and I went to college to study psychology. And so it's just, it was interesting to kind of understand that background many, many years later.
Mm. It's so amazing when you have pieces of your childhood, and especially in this case, that are put together for you and you really are like, oh, wow, you really understand what they were doing more so than when you were a child. Oh, thanks guys for bringing me over here. And then you get older, you're like, okay, that's amazing. That's amazing. Well, you just mentioned something that I find really interesting that you ultimately, and correct me if I'm wrong, chose to major in psychology. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. I think just with my background, I was always curious about people, curious about what made one person different than the other. I grew up in a family of seven. Uh-oh. You couldn't probably get more, seven different people, very different personalities. I mean, of course, there's some similarities growing up with your parents, but I think the psychology of people always fascinated me. What made one person successful versus another? What makes one person outgoing versus another? So I kind of fell into that and I just decided I wanted to pursue psychology. I also wanted to, look into whether I could be a lawyer. So during my time at Fresno State, I took a criminology class and my psychology classes were on one side of the university. My criminology classes were on the other side. And so I would be late to my criminology class every day. And so the professor said, soon since you're late every single day, why don't you sit right up front with me?
Oh.
And so I got to know him and he actually asked me to be his intern. He was a district attorney in Fresno, so the top executive there. And I got to really understand law and I realized after spending that 6 months there that, my heart was really in psychology and people and communications. And so I kind of naturally fell into that and that's kind of, how the story goes.
Oh, amazing. Well, it's always fun to hear, what professors do with that late student. And in your case, that was nice that he did take you on. Okay, so this is really interesting. And I love this
part of your story where you really recognize, okay, you know, I dabbled in getting to know two different realms. And really, it seems as though my heart is over here in psychology and communication. What at this point did you think you were going to be doing career-wise? And ultimately, what did you do post-grad?
Oh, that's such a great question. And you might laugh at this living in LA, but I lived in Fresno, 3 hours north of LA. And I thought, because I just love sports, I thought I was going to be head of communications and PR for the Lakers. So here I am, I'm like packing my bag, you know, I'm going to go do this. And you get like a dose of reality really quick when you get there, like what a coveted job that is. And so I started applying for a job at PR firms in LA. Mm-hmm. And within a couple of weeks of moving there, I you know, fell in love with communications. Because once again, like, even though communications and psychology don't look on the surface that they perfectly align, when you really think about PR and communications, it's really unraveling great stories. Mm-hmm. Like, how does a product get launched? Why is Apple successful? Why is Nike successful? Why is a presidential candidate successful? So I think there's a lot of psychology and communication that go hand in hand. So I wanted to work for the Lakers, but it ended up being in a luxury automotive PR. And you know what? It's been an amazing ride. It's so fun.
It's amazing. And it is. It's so interesting how, gosh, yeah, your story even comes together at this point, because now, of course, and we'll get to it. And I'm very much aware of all that you've done since. But tell us this. How did you land that first role in PR? And was that someone communicating to you, hey, soon, you know, PR really might be something you'd be interested in? Or did it kind of fall into your lap? I'm always curious.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I love that you ended that sentence with curious. I just have this like natural curious nature about me. It goes back to, you know, my parents come to the United States with $300 in their pocket. And I always thought like, okay, how did they do this?
Yeah.
You know, like the name of your podcast, actually, how did they do this? How did, like, what made them successful? Because not everybody who comes to the United States, or not everybody who's born in the United States, can be successful. Not everybody has that grit and that commitment, that perseverance. So I was always like, I think there's a huge connection between like amazement and curiosity. And so I just thought, okay, how do I uncover that? And I love reading. I love writing. I love, you know, uncovering like what makes people who they are, and even what makes products who, you know, what they are. So a lot of curiosity and a lot of good conversations when you help produce and promote these products.
Well, so well said. It has me sitting back thinking about, well, a lot. So we got to keep going, but I'm loving this soon. So well said. And yeah, thinking about, okay, how can I promote these products? How can I promote my clients specifically in the PR realm? Now, how long were you in this role, and what did it look like for you kind of to grow in this specific season of life?
Yeah, I was very junior, you know, coming on very entry level. I remember it specifically. I remember like so entry level that I remember getting a paycheck and it was like $753 every 2 weeks. And I thought, oh my gosh, am I sure I want to be in this life? But I really stayed with it, and it was a lot of fun. So I spent probably the first couple years at a coordinator. And then within 7 years, I was vice president of client services, which means that I oversaw all the strategy and ran a team of, I think, 10, and I ran 7 clients. Some luxury brand clients like Lamborghini, and working with the Volkswagen Group. So a lot of in the automotive luxury space. And it was really fun to be able to help promote that, even at a small agency, these pretty big global brands. I learned a lot. And I learned a lot, not just about the products, but when you work with a global brand, you learn a lot about different cultures. Lamborghini at the time was just purchased by a German company, Audi. So you learned how to deal with Americans, Italians, even the British and the Germans. So it was a lot of people skills you had to really navigate too.
Amazing. Yeah. And yeah, wow. Interesting to think about all of the different people that you are in contact with. And again, those luxury brands are, of course, very fun to highlight and promote, but also the level of expectations, I'm sure, exceeds most. So to think of you being able to do that. And then ultimately, like you said, VP kind of strategy, it sounds like after 7 years, that's a pretty quick rise in my opinion, in the company. What did it look like for you to be in that role for some time? And then ultimately, I'm guessing there was a move elsewhere.
Welcome to today's snack break. Grab a snack and listen in as we share more about today's sponsor. This month's episodes are brought to you by one of my favorite restaurant empires, Texas Day Brazil. My first internship was in marketing and PR at Texas Day Brazil Corporate in Dallas, Texas. They are an authentic Brazilian steakhouse. That's why their meats are cooked the gaucho way, over an open flame with natural wood charcoal. In southern Brazil, local cowboys called gauchos prepare legendary feast in a tradition known as churrasco. They slow roast meats over open flames and present an impressive display of seasonal greens, vegetables, and regional delicacies. At Texas Day Brazil, they continue this treasured tradition, so treat yourself to a wide array of chef-crafted salads, roasted vegetables, and imported cheeses and charcuterie. Enjoy house-baked cheese bread, garlic mashed potatoes, and fried bananas. Turn your card to green, and expert carvers generously serve you sizzling beef, lamb, pork, chicken, and Brazilian sausage. If you haven't visited a Texas Day Brazil location, head to texasdaybrazil.com to find the closest one to you. And stay tuned this month as we share more about this special restaurant as our April sponsor. Okay, guys, grab your snack. It's time to head back to the show.
Yes. When I think back to that time, I was probably about 30, mm-hmm. You know, I really wanted to take on a little bit more responsibility. My parents, like I said, were entrepreneurs. And so my boss at the time, was thinking he might kind of, you know, pass the agency on to somebody else. And a mentor of mine really talked to him and said, you know, soon might be the natural inclination for this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the last minute, he kind of got cold feet. We met with a management mm-hmm. company. And I have never quit a job my entire life on the spot. We met, we talked about it with this management consultant. And he said, you know, I don't think I'm ready. And I pushed myself away from the conference room table and I quit that day. And wow. I still have never quit ever a job just on the spot. I cried for the next, 4 hours straight. And then 2 days later, my now husband, who was a mentor of mine, said, stop your crying. You're going to start your own business right now. And I did. And so I was able to start my first business, Lux Communications, which I ran for 5 years. And then I folded into a new business called Centigrade, which still exists with a couple of partners. And I kind of fell into entrepreneurism, but it just kind of happened because I felt like I was ready for the next step. And I did. It was really inspiring and intimidating at the same time.
Wow. And were these two now Centigrade, which still exist, as you mentioned, which is always impressive to hear. But Lux Communication, was that specifically PR?
That was PR and marketing for luxury brands. Yep. And then when I morphed into a larger agency with another partner, we created a new agency.
Okay.
And that was really exciting because then I got to expand my skills from marketing and communications and to events, CRM, customer relationship management, and creative strategy and brand strategy. So I think my world mainly of communications and marketing really expanded to brand strategy, customer relationship management, creative. So my world got a lot bigger.
Yeah.
And it was really exciting. And it was really cool to have different partners to work with of different cultures. Because when I started my first business, I think there's a benefit of owning your own business because, you know, you get to make the decisions, but there's a loneliness to it.
Yes.
And then second business, Centigrade, we had 4 other partners. And then my third business, the restaurant, I have 1 other partner. So I've been lucky to have different sets of partnerships, one by myself, 1 with 4 others, and 1 with a single other partner. So I've been able to see the pros and cons of each of those avenues. Mm.
Well, and beautifully said, I completely agree. You know, just recently we've started to build out the team here at HSDT, and lonely would be the perfect word to kick things off when you're doing it by yourself. And I love that for you. Yeah, there's been growth. There's been lots of different areas that you've grown in, and then ultimately growing a team as well, which I think is so impressive and so important. And I love too that you just shared the foundation of PR, marketing, communication that you had, but then moving more into the brand strategy, client relations, customer relations and what have you. Yeah, that's incredible that just the growth and the knowledge you have from these years of experience. So this is a hard question, but is there a favorite kind of, you just mentioned three totally different businesses and experiences. Is there a favorite season that you think that was really something? Or I don't know, was there an early time in entrepreneurship that you were like, I'm an entrepreneur, you know, that really stands out?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think starting my first business was the biggest hill to climb because, like I said, it was exciting and then intimidating, you know, but I had this energy that's so new. When I started my first agency, I literally couldn't wait to jump out of bed at 5 a.m. and do things like write the content on my website, pick the logo, do all those things. It's like this, it's almost like having your first kid. You'll never have that experience again. You might have other kids that you love just as much, just like my second and third business, but there's never a second time for something like that. So I feel like I'll never forget. I even can see visually my home office sitting in my second room and 5 a.m. just cranking on my old laptop. Like that was something really special. And I think it just broke that threshold of fear and intimidation and to know that I was able to do it and I can do it again.
Mm. Yeah, you can never have a second first time, right?
Yes.
So makes sense. It makes sense that you would look back on that season fondly. And one thing that was interesting I caught earlier, you mentioned there was a mentor who's your now husband, ultimately became your husband. So give us a little timeline on this. I mean, gosh, what year did you launch your own brand? And then what year did you guys get married?
Oh, okay. So he was a client at my first agency, but I didn't know him and I didn't work on his business because we had probably 30 clients.
Oh, wow.
So I just knew of him. And then after I left, we just, I stayed in the industry and he just really liked my work. And he ended up coming to use some of our services and he just became my mentor. He, he is extremely successful in his own right, has a great business mind. And he was global chairman of YPO. He's been in YPO his entire adult life. And so I just learned so much about how to handle people and how to handle, business navigation through him. So we became very good friends for many years. And then after I left the agency and started my own business, we just really stayed in touch. And then that friendship just really developed. It was really fun and very natural. And they say it all the time, your spouse is always your best friend. And that's what happened.
It's so cool. It's so fun. I love adding in the personal side of the story as we chat career as well, just to hear kind of what was going on. And what year was that? What year did you guys get married?
We got married in 2010.
Okay, 2010. Wow, so fun, so fun. And this is, that season and stint still in Los Angeles at this time. But you mentioned the Good Bowl as well in this conversation. Walk us through kind of the timeline for the different businesses and then ultimately the restaurant. That seems as though it's a totally different industry, right?
Well, I don't recommend it. I'm going to tell you that much right now. I recommend the starting your own business. I recommend the PR agency communications. I don't recommend slinging noodles on a day-to-day basis. they say it's so true. They say it's just such a passion business. It's so complex. It's so stressful, but it's also can be rewarding. It's like anything else. If it doesn't cause you friction and doesn't make you feel uncomfortable, it's probably not very important. And anything that, makes you grow, I think is really worth it. When I was 30, I started Lux Communications. And then when I moved to Michigan, I have a great friend in the business, and she owned a marketing firm, and she wanted to create something bigger. So we started Centigrade 5 years later, so 35. And then when I moved here, I realized in Northern Michigan, there was not any like ethnic food, people of color. And, you know, I would like have these big Vietnamese dinners and friends would come over and they would say, you should start a restaurant. I'm like, no, I'm never doing it. That's a terrible idea. Cause you know, Mikhail's friend from YPO said, if you know anyone who wants to start a restaurant, I will fly anywhere in the world and talk them out of it. And I'll never forget that. But, you know, as I started to think about it, I put together a business plan just to have in my pocket. I talked to my attorney about it and he said, do you have a chef? And I was like, oh wait, no. And he said, well, my buddy and I, you know, I went to high school with him and he's a Vietnamese chef. He owns a restaurant in Flint. And so we talked and incredibly, we have the same story. His family are Vietnamese refugees as well.
Wow.
And so we started the restaurant together and I said, listen, I'm not going to start this restaurant unless we have an impact strategy. And so we called it the Good Bowl because we donate $1 per bowl to charity. Mm-hmm. Every time you come in, you want to order pho or a rice bowl. We'll say, Emily, where do you want your dollar to go to today? And we give you three options. We give you a local charity, a national charity, and a global charity. And then you'll say, okay, I want it to go to Make-A-Wish or X local charity, and we'll put it in the system. And every quarter we change charities. We'll be 6 years in July and we've donated about 160 grand. So about 30,000 a year to charity.
Wow. Oh, that's amazing. What was the original thought behind that? That's very unique.
Yeah. You know, the original thought behind that is, you know, we created the Good Bowl because that's my way of thanking the U.S. for taking us in as Vietnamese immigrants and refugees.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah, your story and the fact that your chef would have such a similar background, that's pretty amazing as well. Well, okay, I have to come and visit. I have to come to the Good Bowl. How fun is that? And I do. I just love the juxtaposition. I think when I chat with entrepreneurs and they have, you know, businesses in the same sphere, it's like, okay, yes, 100% you're an entrepreneur. But then when I hear of people who have businesses in totally different realms, I kind of feel like maybe you're, I don't know, like an A+ entrepreneur because it's just totally different. And so to know that about you and to know that was something, gosh, yeah, 6 years ago you took on. Now, what was happening on the communication, PR, just all of your other businesses at that time? Was there, was everything running smoothly and you were able to step away? Others were leading out. What was that kind of season and the idea of, hey, I have the energy time to take this on?
Oh, that's a great question. So I was still, so when I was 35, I, you know, decided to work full time at Hagerty, my husband's company. And we had the site to take the company public. And so I really needed to invest my time and energy in that strategy. And so what I did was I divested my shares about, you know, less than 10 years ago into the second agency and just spent full time helping to build the Hagerty brand and business. And so we took the company public in just recently, December of 2021.
Oh, congrats. And
so I was able to kind of keep my communications and brand strategy work hat on. And then, you know, I hired a general manager who runs the restaurant day to day. I'm there a couple days a week, but I was, you know, running both Hagerty brand strategy and the Good Bowl at the same time. But I think your point is a good one in terms of three different businesses. I think being an entrepreneur, no matter what business you run, has a lot of commonalities, and it's all about people, right? Are you going to be a people leader or a projects leader? And the more advanced I got in my career, you can only scale if you're a people leader. A projects leader, you can only do so much in a day. If you, you know, really empower people and you really get them in a position to succeed and do a lot, you can accomplish a lot more. So I think learning to be a people leader is how I was able to navigate all these different changes.
I'm pausing here because that really hit me. That's such a great point. project versus people to be a people leader? Because instantly when you said that, I thought of individuals I've worked with that are project leaders, but maybe I've even come away from conversations with them like, ooh, I hope I don't have to talk to them anytime soon. Like, I hope we got
right.
all of the details that they needed so that they right. can run with it and we can not work together right now. So I think it's very evident to me that not only, gosh, yeah, and even back to psychology, your curiosity so early on, and then your love of people, working with global brands and people from so many different cultures, just so many different themes in your story that I've absolutely am loving and will continue to unpack. And I know my listeners are enjoying too. I would be curious because, gosh, you have at this point in time such a variety of experiences and so much wisdom. Is there any instances maybe throughout your career that you'd actually say failure helped shape it?
I think that's a good question. When I've been asked before, what is my first memory of failure? It's pretty young, actually. I was in seventh grade. And I, you know, when you're in elementary school, you pretty much make every sports team, right? Just dying for people to play any sport. So I played every sport, every quarter, you know, and they changed the seasons and then to, you know, different sports. And in seventh grade, I tried out for the girls' tennis team. So, you know, I wasn't overly cocky about it. I just said, okay, I'm going to try out for this team and I'm going to make the tennis team. Well, so I tried out for the team and then Monday morning, they list all the all the team members that made the tennis team. And so my last name at the time, which is a very common Vietnamese last name, Nguyen, N-G-U-Y-N. I remember, you know, being excited, going to the gym, looking at the document, and it had like L and M, and then it went straight to P. Wait, where's my last name? And I didn't make the team. And it was like such a shock to me because I had made every team because that's what happened in elementary school. And so I ended up just devastated at this time because, you know, back then, like all that stuff was devastation. Your world was going to end.
Oh, yeah. Right?
And so I went to the rest of the summer. I went to my local elementary school by myself and I would take my tennis racket and I hit up against the backboard. I would probably spend hours a day, 2 hours a day. And I spent the whole summer learning how to play tennis.
Wow.
And I ended up my freshman year in high school trying out for the tennis team. I made junior varsity and then sophomore, junior, and high school, I made varsity and became captain of the tennis team.
Oh my gosh.
And I know that sounds so silly, but it's like my first like memory of failure and saying, okay, you have two roads. You could say tennis sucks, you know, and I'm never new. Or you could say, okay, I've learned a lesson. I've learned that if you truly care about something, you have to put work into it. And I had this like great sense of reward. And it was like the first time I said, okay, with commitment and focus, I could do anything. So that was like my first like memory of failure, but it was also my first learning of perseverance and focus.
That's not the case for everyone. I would say the majority of young people at that age, if they have that experience, I don't know how many of them are on the court the next day. So I think it says a lot about you, even at a young age, and it says a lot about your parents. It says a lot about your culture. It says just a lot about you that would be the case, that you would turn it around and say, hey, I've got to go for it. So such a great example. And it's making me think that I want to attempt tennis again, because I kind of did the opposite. I'm like, this is hard.
Well, it's probably a little bit of stubbornness too. You know,
yes.
It's like, I know I can play tennis. I know I can do this. You know?
So good. So
it's a fun memory for me. And I know it's a long time. There's been, you know, everybody's had a lot of failures in your life, but that was like literally my first memory of it.
Yeah.
That taught me a great lesson.
I love it. No, I think it's amazing. I think it's awesome. No, tell me this is kind of on the same idea. What is maybe the greatest lesson you have learned?
It goes back to this concept that we've had about being an entrepreneur. It was kind of the same thing that I mentioned earlier when I quit that day. You know, I let it all out for the next couple of days, definitely cried. And I just said, you're at a fork in a road. You can, you know, find the easy way out and say, okay, I've got 7 years of experience, I can go get a job as a VP somewhere else at another firm, or I could say, okay, here's your opportunity. You can really carve out a different road. It's going to be the tougher road. It's going to be maybe the riskier road, maybe the unknown road, but you might have the most amount of growth and reward. And so I just decided that day to become an entrepreneur. So I think when things happen to you that are unplanned, like take a really good pause and understand what your fork in the road is, and versus just burying it and saying, that's terrible, that sucked, and then just doing the easy way out. Like, just give yourself an opportunity to say, what's my pause? What's the fork in the road? And what is the way that I can grow the most? I think that's really important.
Hmm. I love that. I agree. And I think, yeah, so many times when moments like that arise, there is no pause, which kind of creates chaos. And yeah. It's like, no, take that advice, take Soon's advice, just that pause, take a look around, assess. I couldn't agree more. And gosh, Soon, I could continue to unpack your story for hours, I feel like. And I think one thing, getting to know you and getting to know you today, but even before our call, just researching and again, seeing all of your amazing work, there's always things coming up for you. You always have something going on. So how about you tell us what's next for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm super excited about the Boundless Futures Foundation. My husband and I, Mikhail, just launched it in September of last year. And yes. So what's next for me is, continue to support Hagerty, but think about like the second phase of my life. I'm turning 49 in March. Mm-hmm. And I definitely know that it's the second half of the game. And to me, it's something that I read recently. I think it's by David Brooks, is this concept of, I've spent the first half of my life building my resume virtues, and I want to spend the second half of my life building my eulogy virtues. What are people going to say about me? What kind of impact did I really make? And so I feel like I've had some success in terms of work life, but now I'm ready to say, okay, what are people going to say at my eulogy? So, the Balance Foundation is a huge part of that. Just supporting female entrepreneurs. I would not be who I am if I didn't start my own business and have all these incredible learnings along the way. So I want to make sure that I carve a great path for female entrepreneurs. And it's not just about funding and capital, which is part of Boundless Futures Foundation, but it's also this idea of an advisory circle. And it's basically female entrepreneurs with their different fields of expertise on speed dial, because I think when you start your own business, it's not just money, it's huge questions. Mm. And I think if you can have somebody who can shorten that time for you of learning, I think that's going to be crucial for female entrepreneurs.
So exciting. Well, I think on behalf of all of my listeners, so many of them are new business owners or longtime business owners or hopeful business owners, female founders. So big thank you from all of us for all that you're doing with Boundless Futures Foundation, and very excited to see what continues on. There's a rare occasion that I give homework on these episodes, but you guys, those of you who are listening, think about those resume virtues and then think about those eulogy virtues now. I love that, Soon. Such great advice, such wisdom throughout this conversation. Gosh, is there anything though that we didn't cover that you'd like to?
Yeah, I think, part of my growth over the last few years is just, it's not just about doing, it's about taking that time to continually learn. And I've had, I have a goal this year, and this is the first time I've told anybody, I'm going to read 25 books.
Oh my goodness.
And half of those books are going to be around work and business, and the other half is going to be around character and personal development. So I'm super excited about that. I think learning is part of the journey. It's not just about doing. Mm. And I think part of, just to wrap back to that Boundless Futures Foundation, part of being a female entrepreneur under the Boundless Futures Group is your business has to have a social impact. Mm. So it has to help this society in some way. And so I'm excited to kind of learn how these different businesses are trying to create this boundless impact in society.
Amazing. Amazing. So good. So much fun to hear all of the details of what you have coming up. And I think too, one of the coolest takeaways from our conversation is just the different connections that you've made along the way, including moving forward with all that you're doing with the foundation. But you've mentioned so many friends and coming to the restaurant or, you know, spending time in LA and mentors, lots of different mentors throughout your life. So I'd love to know, who do you know that should maybe come on and share their story?
Well, actually, a really good friend of mine who lived in LA as well, she launched a company called Go Silly, and it's basically silicone products for the home and kids. Oh, wow. She's this incredible entrepreneur, and her goal is to get rid of plastics in homes, starting with babies and young people. And so she's someone that I think you will adore. She's funny and she's a great entrepreneur, and she's out to solve this social issue in a really creative, beautiful way. Oh,
amazing. Well, you all will have to stay tuned for a potential episode. Go Silly. What a smart name. What a clever name for the company. How fun is that? Oh my goodness. Well, soon I'm sure that many listeners have already been looking you up. They're trying to track you down. But tell us, where can listeners best connect with you?
Yeah, I definitely Boundless Futures Foundation, or I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram, just Sune Haggerty or Boundless Futures Foundation.
Amazing. Well, I cannot thank you enough for your time today. This was such a treat, and looking forward to having listeners hear your story.
Thank you so much for the time. It's been so fun.
Likewise.
Thank you all for listening to today's episode of How'd She Do That? I am Emily Landers. You can follow me on Instagram over at Emily Landers. And I hope you'll grab a little something special for my birthday over at shophsdt.com. The perfect gift you could give me is getting yourself a gift from the shop. And please, please feel free to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes if you have not done that yet. Subscribe to the show so you don't miss our Tuesday episodes or my updates as well, my Emily updates. You guys, thank you for the community that you have provided me. Thank you for the joy and fun that you bring me every week. I love you guys. I love HSDT, and I will talk to you soon. Bye, guys.